Well, welcome to Fuck You Friday. I am your host, Wynn Silberman. This is my co-host, Casey LeBlanc, and I am very excited to have our guest, Marquette King, in the building. And I hope it's going to be a great podcast. I know it will be. It's going to be entertaining, at least. And what we always do, Case, before we embark on this journey with Marquette, is go a little bit to the origin of Fuck You Friday. And I'd like you to, you know, share about what you think about it.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I was thinking about this before the show. Is I'm getting a little tired of carrying this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So I think what we should actually do.
Oh, that's funny.
It is. Yeah. It's, well, typical to our friendship. I have to do all the heavy lifting.
Oh, cool.
And so what I want to do here is the first time ever we're breaking the mold and we're gonna kick it back to you. I want to hear what you think of Fuck You Friday.
Okay. You know what? I'll do that. I'll do that. And here's what it means to me. Here's what it means to me. Obviously, we know the origins, right? And if you guys don't understand the origins, go back to another episode and figure it out. What Fuck You Friday means for me is really two things. Number one, obviously, from a corporate perspective, from a business perspective, you win on Fridays. You can make ground on Fridays. If you just sit your ass down and go to work from 1 to 5, 1 to 6, where other people are fucking around, you're going to get so much more ahead as the weeks progress, as the years progress, that you're going to win. So from a corporate perspective, that's what it means for me.
Okay.
From a personal perspective, I think it's deeper than that. It's about fucking getting up when you're down. For me, you've inspired me. This guy inspires me. It's about getting up. I've fucking faced adversity before. You've faced adversity before. A lot of people go, oh, you know, this happened to me or this happened to me. And, oh, I'm so sad. Sure, you get sad. You get sad, but just get the fuck up.
Right, right. Well, I'm really excited for this episode. This is the first episode that we've had a longer relationship, all three of us. So we all know each other. So we talked about this before the episode. We're going to get into it today.
Let's go.
So Marquette, let's just start with you. Where are you from?
First of all, fuck you.
Well, actually, we're recording on Thursday, so it's Fuck You Thursday today for everybody. So we're going to have fun today. We're going to mix it up. We're going to be able to go into professional. We're going to go into personal. Yeah. Then we're going to go into some really weird shit to really put you on the spot.
Yeah. Let's go. Yeah. Let's
all right, good.
I learned from the best.
Well, he's the king of weird.
Oh, cool. Well, where are you from? I mean, just talk a little bit about where you're from.
I'm originally from Macon, Georgia. Born and raised there, and just there most of my life down south. In 2012, went to Oakland, met you in 2013.
Yeah.
No, 2012?
2012, whatever.
2012-ish, yeah, when I was trying to get a Honda Accord.
I walked out in flip-flops.
Wait, guys, for just the common human over here, like, how did you guys meet? Let's start
that's,
there.
That's this actually kind of interesting.
Yeah,
I got I was referred to him by another person I was working with at the time. And he was like, he can help you out a lot with what you got going on over there on that side because I'm not living there. And then I hit him up, and then because it usually takes
like a cold call. It was like, just, hey, Wynn, I got this guy. He recommended you.
Yeah, he recommended me to Wynn, and I was like, all right. So I hit him up, and then he was supposed to meet me at a dealership
because we were looking at getting a car. And remember, this is year one, right? A guy from Macon, and we met with Bud, right? Bud Dupree, who's also from Macon, it's country out there, right? I mean, there's not a whole hell of a lot.
No, there's 60 people. Well, in the whole town.
Yeah,
country in two different positions. You know, the punter makes this amount, and the linebacker makes that amount.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, there's that too.
But the linebacker usually only plays X amount of time. We're going to get into that. Then the punter could play a lot longer.
Yeah, well,
we still don't make as much as Bud.
Can we stay on point here a little bit, please?
We're going all over the place. God, you're so here's the point. Right
well,
now,
I'm
just
sorry.
Well, we all got ADHD.
The point is,
people are already tuned out.
Especially your first year as a rookie, you got a bunch of shit coming at you. And one of the first things you think of as an athlete is you need to be able to move around. So, like I said, we were working with the same company. The guy that referred me to him is like, look, can you help Marquette out a little bit? Like, sure, I'll show up at the dealership. And I showed up, and you were a little taken aback, I think, because of my wardrobe. Is that right?
Yeah, it was a little interesting, man. You had the Chuck Norris Levi's on, and then you had the thong sandals on. So I was like, who the hell is this walking up in the car lot?
You were an undrafted free agent. You'd already made the Raiders at that point.
Yeah.
Were you 1 year in, 2 years in at that point?
I was like barely not even a season in all the way. It was like, what was it, like the third?
Well, it's interesting because your first year, remember, you're going against, like, Leckler's – fucking good.
He was a legend.
He was a legend, and he was going up against. They didn't expect Marquette to make the team. They just wanted him to be able to push Lechler to make sure his leg was right for the.
Which is typical, right? Like, I mean, if you every camp every summer, you're going to have two kickers, two punters, right? Yeah. And they already really know who's going to make the team. So it's
pretty much all a GM wants is the most competitive possible camp he can get. And so that's why when they look at priority free agents like Marquette was, he wasn't drafted. They're just looking for athletes to compete. But what was interesting that first year is that he performed to such a level in the preseason. Actually, go a little bit about that, because remember you were kind of – talk about the first time – actually, yeah. Talk about the first time you took the ball. Was it Dallas or
– It was Dallas. They kept saying that Shane Leckel was hurt, and I didn't believe him because I thought, I don't know, like it's my first time playing in a stadium with over like – I don't know, like, at Fort Valley State, the people that can sit on the sideline is about the amount of people that stay on the sideline watching the game from Fort Valley. Now we finna walk in the stadium with thousands of people there. So I thought they were lying. Like, they were like, Shane Lucker's not going to play. You're going to have to play this game. And I'm like, all right. So I'm warming up, and I'm thinking Shane's going to just pop out somewhere. And I'm just looking around the whole time. And then, I just kept kicking. And
what's going through your head at that point?
It's just like – I mean, it's almost like kind of like what you do, like when we just boarded the crib on the weekends and stuff, and you just decide to just jump in cold ass water randomly. That's the same feeling I got. Like you either jump and you make the leap to go to that next level, or you either mess up.
Now, at the time when you were getting your first shot, did you feel like I can do this? I'm good enough to do this, or were you just still feeling it out? Like, dang, I don't know. We'll see.
No, because I had a mindset where I didn't want to go back. I didn't want to go back to Macon. I didn't want to, like, my mindset was never to be in the NFL. My mindset was to not have a normal job. So, like, my goal was to focus on not having a normal job. And when I had the opportunity in front of me where it was like, all right, well, if you do good now, then it'll have a positive impact on your career later. And it was like, all right, fuck it. Let's go. I either do it or I don't. And, I don't know, as soon as I caught the snap and I had the ball in my hands, I'm like, all right, that's it. What you going to do?
Hold on. Hold on. I'm sorry. There is an awesome moment that I don't know if you've ever shared with anyone, but so he's back there. Remember, I don't know if you realize it, he's black, okay? And it's
the hair threw
and the
me
reason
off.
I say that, the reason I say that, as at the time, were there any black punters even competing for a position at that time?
Nope.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about what the fucking defense told.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, so, this is a fucking funny story.
Yeah, so we run out. Steve Hoffman, the coach at the time, he was like, whatever you do, do not look in the stands as you run on the field. So what do? Look in the stands. So I run out there, and I'm like, damn, there's a lot of people out here. So I run out there, and I stand behind the, and we're backed up. And that's probably one of the worst positions to be in, especially
so you're first. You're at the touchdown?
We're in the back of the end zone.
And for like, your first punt.
For my first punt. You can just hear people in the back, blah, 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 blah. And then I'm standing back there, and I'm like, fuck, all right. And then some dude from the Cowboys is like, what the fuck? That's a black punter. This shit a fake. And I'm like,
so they adjust themselves because they think it's going to be a fake punt.
It was funny. So after that, it took a lot of, like, edge off of me. Like, it made me feel a lot more relaxed.
Just kicking the first one. Just catching it.
When he said what he said, it relaxed me all the way. Oh, because I was actually kind of anxious about going out there.
That actually helped. It made you laugh a little bit.
I laughed a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing, too, they spread out and they weren't going to blitz. They weren't going to rush.
I mean, they still rush. They still rush because I got hit. After I kicked it, I got hit and I fell on the ground. I'm like, fuck.
They called a flag? Was there a flag?
Yeah, it was a flag. But then, like, I just saw green, like, in my face on the mask. And then I looked up. I was like, as long as I hit the ball good. And that shit was still in the air just selling. I'm like, yeah. So, like, I don't know. I can show you a video later. But, like, I got excited. I was like, man, I hit a really good punt the first one. Just kept doing my thing.
That's the beauty of editing. They're just going to throw that punt right on the YouTube right there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, I want to fast forward a little bit because obviously, so that first season, he didn't play. The Raiders were able to position things in a way where they kept him. But, you know, he wasn't, Shane was still there. That next year is really the year where you're the guy. And they tell you you're the guy. And I want to talk about that week one of that first time that you were the man. Because what happened was you didn't have the greatest game, if you recall.
Yeah, it was the Bengals. I came straight to your house after the game,
too. Yeah, what happened? Yeah.
I mean, shoot, you go out there, and it's like, all right, well, I guess it's official. I'm that guy right now for this team. and you go out there and you play, and I don't know, it's just, it's almost like a dog running around to sniff everything to kind of like figure out what everything is, where everything is, and why it is the way it is. And it was kind of like that for me. Like, I was just walking around the field, saw Pac-Man Jones walking down the field, rapping a fucking song. I don't know what song it was, but he, nobody could hear the song he was rapping, but you could just hear him just in the whole stadium. And then you had, I don't know, just walking around and just figuring stuff out. Like, why am I here? Like,
so this was your first real game.
First real game.
Okay, so it's kind of a surreal feeling, right? Like, this is it. You know you're going to be playing.
It didn't feel surreal until I got in the game. I get in the game, and it's like, I know everything feels normal, but, like, the way that I, like, the outcome of my kicks and stuff came out, like, look, it wasn't like I won it.
You had a shitty game.
It was a shitty game.
So I want to know, so take me through the because punting is, you must catch how many of the snaps per day?
A lot, right? I catch over 100 a day.
Over 100 a day. And how many punts do you, like, when you're in season?
Not many. You don't do a lot. No more than probably 40, 50.
A day?
Not a day. Like,
a week.
Two times out of the week, and then you got game day, so, like, a total of 3 days out of the week kicking.
Okay. And is that pretty typical for punters?
I mean, for smart ones.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because you would like, as a punter, to be able to practice every day, but you have to balance your body and the ability to perform. So that's kind of understanding who you are as an athlete, right? I mean, you have to know when your leg is too much.
I made that mistake as soon as we finished the season. It was the same year we went to playoffs against the Texans. And, I was kicking so much. Like, I think I started kicking at the end of January, right after the season. And I was like, I want to get better. I'm going to get better. And I kept kicking the whole fucking year. And then by the time playoffs came through, I was like, man, my body was like, nah, I'm tired.
Yeah, you got dead leg.
Yeah.
You did.
Yes, but that's a great point. I want to stick on this for a minute, is because you have to it's awareness, right? It's what is your body telling me? What is cuz your mind is telling you one thing, but your body is going to have a reality that might be a little bit different. So, can you walk us through your younger years and what you were doing, just like you just said, and then how did you evolve and kind of understand, because when you're young, you've got all this confidence that you could do anything anytime you want to do it. How did you evolve mentally to get to that stage of being like, look, I got to be smart?
I think it was just experience. Like, the way I punted when I was playing against Houston in the playoff game, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't my best, you know. So it was still I was still able to, like, just maintain my average way of punting too. But once you go through that, it's like, all right, well, I need to be smarter with how I go through this next season or the next couple of seasons. And if I want to be at my best, you just gotta make sure you do everything just right. If you don't adjust, then you're just gonna stay behind. And then if you stay behind and you don't adjust, then you're just gonna lose what you got, you know?
I love that.
You understand that? You're a business guy.
Yeah, I love that.
You know what's interesting? His game, I want to talk about his shitty game again, though, because we're not done with that. I want to tell you what happened after the game. Yeah.
Let's go.
This guy.
I think that's what people want to hear anyway.
Yeah, well, he comes to the Saratoga home.
Yep.
And we have a fire in the fireplace because that's what soothes him. So after every game, he would ask for a campfire, which means please put a fire in the wood-burning stove, which is fine. I like fires, too.
Yes, he did.
He proceeded to probably down, I don't know, a couple bottles of wine
here. It was two.
A couple bottles of wine.
Two was my max.
Then he went skateboarding at night. Well, it was a skateboard. It was the swivy things. It was the
no. It was skateboard.
It was a skateboard.
Skateboard. Yeah.
Pissed off. Just I'm not ever gonna play again. They're gonna cut me. This is bullshit. Yeah. It was interesting because he was fucking down on himself, and I'm like, hey guys, one game, like, let it slide.
So what was tell me about the game. Just give me some quick stats. Do you remember exactly?
I don't think it was my best. I still averaged in 40. I think it was. I don't know. I gotta go back and look. I hope it won the high 30s. But, like, I just knew. I don't know. My mindset. I feel like I got to do things 10 times better than anybody at my position. And that's my mindset. And that day I didn't do it. And I'm a competitive person. So, like, if I don't play my best or if I don't perform my best, then it's a problem.
Was there anything mentally that got in your way, like your first game?
Not at all. It's just I just had to do better. Same thing with when I come back. Like, once I go back out there, I just got to do it. You know what I'm saying? I've been doing this for a while. I've been practicing and I know what to do. Like, you just got to do it.
Got it.
Well, and what happened next week?
I mean, I did better next week. I don't remember.
You had
who played.
I forget who you played, but you had a fucking hell of a game.
Yeah.
You had a 60-yard bomb. You had a couple good punts, and then he catapults right, and then he catapults into a unique position, a unique situation where he's really top five in the league, right?
I finished number one that year.
You finished? I'm sorry.
I fucked up the
good.
First
way
game.
Way to correct him. Yeah, this guy's your agent. I mean, hey, listen, that's maybe. Way to negotiate. Jeez.
Yeah, well, things happen. Things happen.
Okay, so this is your second year in the league? Is you were number one punter second year in the league?
Yeah, basically.
And
so
and also, too, I think one of the important things to point out is you start to become a personality, right? When did you start to evolve into
that's interesting.
Where you felt comfortable to be yourself back there? Because once you become number one at your position, then you feel a little more confident to start opening up.
Well, the thing about it, I've always done that. Even what you saw, if we go back and watch the film from the Cowboys game my rookie year when I first played a preseason game, that was me the whole time. The only difference was the more games you win on a team, the more successful the team becomes. They try to find things. The TV people trying to find more things. And the things I was doing before that, even it was a game I just saw on my phone where Emmanuel Sanders missed a punt return. He dropped it and we got the ball back. And I was doing a pony dance then when we were in Denver. It was the last game, I think, in Denver. And I was doing it then. It was the same game Derek Carr got hurt. But then, I guess the more games you win,
you started expressing yourself, and it was interesting because, and I see this in a lot of professional athletes in the NFL. There's a point at which a couple things happen. Number one, if you get to the league, sometimes the stage is too big for you. Sometimes you just can't perform, and you fizzle out. Then there's guys who are
By the way, that's not just in the league. That's in life.
That's a good point.
That's in life. That's true. That's when the lights come on, there's some people that are just not ever going to be ready.
Yeah, you're right. We call that in basketball, we call that bubblegum chewers. They're the guys that, right before the game, they're swishing threes, they're dunking, they're chewing their gum. The lights come on, they can't. Bricks all day.
There's CBD gum now that people are really using. Yeah, that's special. So you might need a new nickname.
I might try some of that.
You might have some in your pocket.
Yeah, I might. But the point is, it was cool to watch Marquette evolve as a player, because the third way that athletes react in the NFL is that they become so comfortable in a way and comfortable in their own skin, and it has to do with confidence. Confidence wins. Confidence wins every time. When that experience molds into a confident player and they can even express themselves on the field, that relaxes them to perform. Unless you disagree, Marquette, but I would say expressing himself was just showing confidence that he was going to do it. And it was interesting because I'll never forget, we talk about that, the Gallup, right? It was kind of one of his patented moves. I mean, that game, was it a Monday night game? I'll never forget this because of the first time in the history of what I saw in the NFL. I don't know if you remember Deion Sanders' case. I think you're familiar with him. I think he won a couple Super Bowls, actually.
He won, but Name sounds familiar.
There was this thing back in the day. I don't think they do it anymore. I can't remember if they do it anymore. But it's when you ball, you get the call, right? Yeah. And I think it was because of Monday night football. It was
a Monday night
when you ball, you get the call. So the big thing amongst the players was like, fuck, I hope I have a great game enough where – eyeball, so I get to be interviewed by Deion Sanders after the game, because that means you balled out, right? Well, traditionally, we reserve that for ballers, meaning running backs, quarterbacks, receivers, linebackers, whatever. Never in the history of the NFL has Deion Sanders, primetime, requested a punter. And in that moment, I thought, holy shit, this is something different. The punter, Marquette, when he balled out, because I don't forget all your punts, but do you remember? I mean, you just had a phenomenal game. You stuck one at the one or two or
two or three of them inside of five, something like that.
He gets called, and for me, that was a moment as an agent, because I'm like, wow, this is something special, because you have Derek Carr. So Marquette gets the headphones. You get to be interviewed with Deion, and Derek Carr is trying to get airtime. You have the quarterback, the franchise quarterback of the Raiders, trying to scoot in and
did you give him one of these? Derek, give me a minute.
I was just in like a daze where I was just excited. So it just, I don't know, everything just happened.
It was unique. It was cool.
Yeah.
So at what point in your career did you realize, I'm comfortable enough now, I've done enough? Because remember your first game, you have a bad game, and you're like, I'm going to get cut. At what point were you like, okay, now I can start doing what is comfortable, what's natural to me?
I mean, I still kind of did it. Regardless, even from day one, okay. The only difference was we won more games, so like they just tried to find more things to like entertain people, I guess.
Yep.
And they just kept a camera on me one day and saw what I did and started watching me from then on.
What about the flag incident? I just want to skip because we're gonna have a lot to talk about, but I don't know if you remember this, but someone went after you. I mean, you got the penalty. You got roughing the punter. And he takes the flag and he does this thing and throws the flag down, right? Well, it goes viral, right? But guess what? Another flag pops up.
It's offset.
It's not good. No. It's not good. But it's interesting. I want to hear, because it was Coach Del Rio at the time, right?
Yeah.
Tell me what happened. Like, put yourself back in that play. You throw the flag because I don't even know if you really felt like you even knew you were going to do it. You were just pissed. Tell me about it.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't happy about the situation. I mean, you got to remember, like, that's my bread and butter.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so, like, someone went after your legs.
Yeah, so, like, they were even talking about it because they ran into me, like, before that, mm-hmm. a couple of times before that, and they even told me they were coming back after me, even after they hit me, and they didn't throw the flag then. So it was just a bunch of buildup, and I just got to a point when they hit me, and because the instruction was to hit the ball in the back of the end zone. We were pretty far back, and as soon as I dropped the ball, I knew it was gone. I hit it. As soon as I got hit, I was like, all right, I did my job, so now, fuck y'all. So, like, I don't know, I was really feeling a certain type of way, especially when somebody's coming after you, like, you're a receiver, you know what, I'm going to attack you and I'm trying to break your wrist. And then, like,
yeah,
I don't know, the referee sees that they're trying to do that and they don't call nothing, but then eventually they got to call it because it's obvious, and you just react.
So I want to know, we're kind of shifting gears a little bit. I love that play. That's one of your most famous plays. But I want to know, just as from a common fan perspective, what is it like being an NFL punter in, I guess, in the difference between, you know, defense and offense, and then you're on an island a little bit on the team. So what, give us a little bit of information about what the life is like as a punter in the NFL.
I mean, I feel like it translates to my actual real life. I like being in my own little area. I like being around people that I enjoy being around, like good friends, you know, good family members, but like, I don't know, it's kind of like you got to entertain yourself because you're not with the team most of the time. Like, and it's funny how we used to have conversations where the media used to be like, he used to be a locker room distraction. Well, how the fuck am I a locker room distraction when I'm around a team like 3% of the time? Because kickers, punters, and long snappers in a total different room, and the rest of the team's like in meeting rooms the whole time. So it's like, you just got to find a way to entertain yourself, whether Jenna Castle would go on a computer in a training locker room and look up houses on Zillow, trying to just randomly, Kondo would be foam rolling, FaceTiming his kids, and I'd just be walking circles or playing wall ball with myself. You know what I'm saying? So, like,
how long are you at the facility on a given day?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Probably 6:30 in the morning until 3 o'clock in the evening, okay. 4 o'clock in the evening.
Okay.
So you just got to find a way to entertain yourself.
And how long, as a punter, how long are you actually out on the field?
Man, do you want to tell you the amount of time that I spend if it was a legit work day? If I calculated the amount of time that I actually did something, it'll probably be about an hour, 45 minutes.
Wow.
So I'm just there. You know what I'm saying? Like, meetings probably go on for 20 minutes for special teams. You got 15-minute team meetings. And then you got to lift weights for about, what? Don't quote me on the mouth, but you got to lift weights for probably like 30 minutes because it ain't crazy because they don't want to hurt you.
Yeah. Phantom lifts. We do call those phantom lifts.
Yeah. And then,
you've been doing that for a long time. Yeah, you're a professional phantom guy. Okay. I like that. Yeah, the phantom guy. All right, so you're having to entertain, kind of finding your own.
You just got
to
be your own little world.
You're not really part of that. Does it feel weird once you do get into a locker room, or do you know the guys well enough to where there's more camaraderie in game day and stuff like that?
I mean, I don't know. It's like when you're in college, it's more like a family. Y'all experience that. But like in the pros, it's almost like you're alone. You're by yourself, especially as a specialist, what I've experienced. Everybody's got wife and kids and stuff. And like, I don't know, nobody really wants to hang out that much. So it's like it doesn't feel like a family, especially from my world, because I'm by myself most of the time. Unless it's with Kondo and Janikowski. And especially at the beginning, it was a little – interesting between all three of us because they were with Shane for like 15 years before. So
can you just give me an idea of what Janikowski was like?
Oh my God.
He was cool, man. I liked him.
Yeah.
He liked you know party. What?
I enjoyed his confidence. He was a really confident person.
Because he was a little bit older, right? At the time that when you
he was
got
definitely
there.
Older.
Yeah, so he knew the deal. He'd made some money.
Yeah.
He'd already had some success.
That's
a good spot to be in. You made a little money, you had some success as a kicker. You're like a kicker. You're like, man, I could do this forever.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, let's talk about it. Let's segue a little bit. You have an awesome career with the Raiders. And then you're getting ready for your what year number was this? This was five. Year five maybe is when Gruden came, or
six.
Okay, so you're ready for your sixth year, and by now you're the man. I mean, you've averaged what 1-4 in the league.
Couple All Pros, right? Wasn't there a
one All Pro?
Okay, but you're
you look at that. I'm a glass half full guy. He's like, you're just a top five guy. You're like, no, I'm number one. See,
here's the point. We're getting ready for what's called OTAs. I think it's OTAs, right? Mm-hmm. We're getting ready for OTAs. And organized team activities is what that means. What that means is right after the draft, you have mini camp, and then you have basically practice, a list of organized activities. And that takes you traditionally – they're not going to do it next year, by the way, because of COVID precautions still, which makes it really difficult for the way for someone to try to make the team on their first jump because there's not a lot of opportunities to make an impact.
Right.
But literally after the OTAs, that's when you have a break, June 15th, and that's when it's on you to work out until camp, which is July 29th. So he's getting ready for OTAs, and we're expecting, you know, for me as an agent, that's usually like the best day in the world is the first OTAs. Because number one, Marquette doesn't have a lot of time on his hands all of a sudden, right? So instead of me having to take a phone call at 9, 11, and 1, I'm on a little vacay, right? So I'm down in LA and thinking, hey, it's OTAs tomorrow. I'm going to have a cocktail. In fact, I'm going to have maybe 2 or 3 cocktails because it's the one time where I know – if I don't answer the phone, it's okay because he's not going to call because he's at practice. So I decided to turn up a little bit. And, let's talk about that first day because you hadn't met Gruden yet. Reggie McKenzie was the GM. And you knew the reputation of Gruden made a little angry. And you knew that your new special teams coach was Italian. And so you started actually – and this is actually very intelligent – you – had some gifts for them. Talk a little bit about that first day that you're planning on meeting Gruden.
Yeah, so me and Sweet went to go get breakfast. And, man, it was interesting because I was walking to the breakfast spot because we had to park about half a mile down the street from the restaurant. We're walking. Had several people run up to me. Man, you did so much for the town, bro. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, blood, blah, blah, blah. It's like, man, I appreciate you, man. Thanks a lot. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Making an impact some kind of way. So I go down to the breakfast spot. But before that, I skipped a step. So before breakfast, I went to a store. I got limoncello because the Italian special teams coach.
Which is interesting, right? How would he, I mean, the fact that he would know to get limoncello, which is a unique Italian drink, alcohol. Right.
You don't even have to drink much to fill it, too.
Yeah, it's a smart play, brilliant play. And then what else did you get for Gruden?
And then I got Gruden a box of Snickers because I heard about how intense he was as a person. So like,
those commercials, right? Oh, if you're hangry, grab. Remember how those commercials where you turn into something?
So I showed up to the facility. I'm walking around. I'm like, nobody in here. So I start walking through the hallways and everything, look for Reggie, and nobody just in there at the time. And man, I was going to leave him, but I was like, I'd rather give him to him in hand. Like, I want him to just meet me and know who I am. So I get back in the car. Then me and Swift go to breakfast, get food. And then I get a call from Reggie, and he's like.
Reggie's the GM.
Yep. Yeah, so he was like, hey, you need to come back. We need to talk. I'm like, all right, well, shoot. All right, let's go.
You didn't think anything at
the time. I wasn't thinking nothing. I'm like, man, I'm finishing the top, three? So, like, I wasn't thinking nothing. So, shoot, I go there. Get notified I'm finna get released because I guess they don't want me. So I'm like, damn. So what the hell do I do with all this limoncello and this Snickers?
I still have it, by the way.
You still got it. I still have it. So then I didn't believe him, but they're like, all right, your name's gonna hit the wire around noon, blah blah blah. And I'm walking down the locker room. I go back to the locker room and I got Swift with me. I'm like, well, since you ain't never been to Raiders facility, let's just walk around. Let me show you what it looks like. Like it's almost like I believe it, but I don't believe it. So I'm like, since they're gonna cut me. So we walk around, go to the locker room. And it was people in there getting off-season workouts. So I'm in there, I'm like, hey, bro, it was fun hanging out with y'all, man. It was an honor playing with y'all on the same team, but I'm finna get let go. Everybody just stopped what they were doing. I was like, man, shut the fuck up. You didn't joking too much.
Yeah, didn't Marshawn say this
is crazy? No, this was next. Oh. So I'm like, bro, I'm dead serious. I'm finna get let go. Man, shut your ass up. You be joking too much, blah, blah, blah. And I'm packing up a bag at the same time, and I just leave it there, and I walk out. I go see Marshawn, and I'm like, hey, bro, it's cool getting a chance to play with you on the same team, man. I mean, I know I recruited you here, but I got to go, man. And he was like, what? Shut the fuck up. I'm like, bro, for real, I'm finna get cut. man, you lying, Swill. Why he always lying, Swill? Like, it was. But then, I mean, shoot.
What's and going then, through your head at that point?
It was just, I couldn't believe it because it's like, man, this is a league of the best of the best. So, I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out, like.
At that point in your career, because you had had so much success in such a short amount of time, are you, do you get this confidence where you're untouchable at that point? And then when something happens, is it even bigger blow?
I don't know. I don't know if I would call it untouchable because I still, I don't know.
You knew it was a business. You knew it was possible.
I didn't understand the business side. So that's the part that broke me down after. But it was just, it's a league of the best of the best. Like, are they really going to let me go because I put so much work into this organization?
But did
like,
you think this position? Before? Or you never thought about it. Is it possible that I could get cut? Like, going into OTAs, are you like, man, I got every
I've always thought when you perform at your best and you do really good at your position, like, you're in a pretty good position. That was my
traditionally, mindset. The NFL is a performance-based business.
I understand that. Period. But so most places are performance-based, right? Fair. There's just – it's amplified at the NFL level because there's so much media and attention on it.
Fair.
But – the world is a performance-based business.
Yeah.
Right? Like we can talk all we want about the NFL, and a lot of people see it, a lot of people talk about it. Out there, it's the same thing, right? And so some people are aware that every single day they have to show up, they've got to perform, and some people just kind of walk through life and don't really get it.
Yeah.
And so I guess my question is, when you get to the top of your game, what is your mental state of mind, and then what happened when you got that call from Reggie? Like, did you think – every single day I've got to be at my best? Or did you think, man, I'm pretty good right now. I feel pretty confident. I'm kind of
I never got comfortable. I was still working out, like, around that time. So it's like, and I made sure I was, if I started off that race, like, ahead of a lot of people, I made sure I stayed and maintained that spot. And to get that call, it was just, I don't know. Like, I stayed at your old apartment. And that night, and I saw my name.
That was a bad day.
That was a bad day. I saw my name going into the ESPN thing, and I was like, bro, is this serious? And I just started crying.
Well, remember something.
Well, wait, hold on. Are you by yourself at this point because your agent has
I'm in Manhattan Beach with Mr. Gallagher.
Oh, God, say no more.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're doing. I'm surprised I wasn't there.
I know.
That's another podcast. Okay, so you're at the apartment by yourself?
At the time, I was talking to somebody, so we were both there at the time.
That helps.
The issue for me was, remember, in my mindset, it's the one day I could take off. And I get a call from Reggie McKenzie, and I'm going, what the fuck does Reggie want to talk right now? Like, I mean, he's cool.
Had he already talked to you?
He must have.
He already talked to me. Yeah.
But I you know, I'll talk to you later, you know?
Oh, you clicking my voicemail?
Yeah. Let me sleep in.
Are you clicking Marquette to voicemail too?
No, but but he hadn't called yet. And then I get a text first. He didn't call. I think you texted first. I just got released. I just got released. They just released me. And I looked at it. I'm like, no fucking way. And then I go, what? And then it dawns on me that Reggie McKenzie's calling me. Like, holy fuck, what's going on? So I call Reggie, and he goes, hey, you know, we had to let Marquette go. It wasn't really my decision, so to speak. Just kind of leaving it out there like
you're that. Like, hey, pal, you're the GM. I guess Gruden at the time.
That's the changing of the guard, right? Yeah. And there's a whole thing into that. I mean, it's like, why did they release you? And there's a bunch of different opinions on that, Marquette. I mean, there's the fan opinion, which is, well, maybe it was because of throwing flags and getting penalties, right?
But before we get into that, there was something important that you had mentioned. So you're in the apartment. You're with. You know, you're with somebody, but you're seeing your name go across the ticker, and you're like, you kind of broke down.
Yeah.
So what happened, and kind of what was going through your head?
It was just weird, because it's like, damn, man, I thought this was a performance-based league. Like, they want the best of the best in it, and it's like, you perform, you're not asking for much. Like, I was in the middle of my contract. Like, I'm just chilling, you know? And at the same time, you see people coming up with these narratives or stories that aren't really confirmed at all. But they just somehow come up with these stories, and it's like, damn, like, people see me as this way, people see me as that way, and people see me as that way. So, obviously, now that I got a chance to look back on it, it was the beginning of a growth period for me, like, as a person.
So, because the NFL, like we talked about, is in the spotlight, and a lot of people have narratives or opinions, you're in this position of, I'm watching my name go across the ticker, and this is going through your head. A lot of things are probably going through your head. do you hear all of these opinions? I mean, it's almost impossible to, right?
It's just, yeah, you can't ignore it.
You can't
get away
from it.
It's just so aggravating because it's like, damn, like, what else am I supposed to do? Because I feel like physically on earth, I feel like I did everything I was possibly supposed to do to maintain that position to be successful at that position in that league.
Okay, so I got another question. And you had said this was the start of some real personal growth for you. So now that you've had a chance to separate that moment from a couple of years and you've got a chance to look back, and I'm sure we'll get into some of the things that happened after that.
Yeah.
But looking back, what are some of the takeaways that you have from that time in your life?
I think the first one is the revenge factor. I remember I had a talk with you. I was like, I want to go to the Broncos. I want revenge. Well, it's not up to you to get revenge with somebody else. Your main task or your goal in life is definitely not to get revenge on somebody else. It's to continue doing what you do, and a revenge factor will come later. You know?
So focus on you.
Focus on
you. That's the one thing you can control, yeah, right?
Control what you can control.
Because actually the idea of revenge can play mind games on you to where it overcomes your mind and actually becomes you fixate on it. Yeah, that's
fixating on negativity doesn't win.
Nope.
It doesn't win, and a lot of, for me personally, you have to live through experience with that, and you know, there's people I'm mad at, right? But you have to make a decision at that moment, just like you have in growth, of like, hey, it's not necessarily about what that person did to you or what that situation caused. It's how do I beat it? How do I succeed? And how do I succeed?
That's it, right there,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If I focus on myself, if I make myself a better person, a better player, physically and mentally, and I win, that's the game.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and by the way, I won as an agent that day because let me talk to you about what happened in the next couple of days. I want to talk about me. So here's the deal. So I have a guy who I assumed was going to play
for 20 years.
Now he's cut. And by the way, it's OTAs. So the draft has occurred. What happens then is very important. Teams pretty much have an idea of who they want to be on the roster. And they've spent all their money. No money. They've spent it mostly. And so you're put in a situation like, oh, my God. All of a sudden, it's like, where is he going to go? By the way, it's punter. It's not three punters on a team. You keep one punter on a team. There's 32 positions in the entire world that you're going to try to go for. 32 jobs. That's it in the entire world. And so I was a little concerned, you know. And there weren't a lot of teams that called. I thought maybe, you know, we thought the first day, it was like, it's the best punter in the league. Like, this is going to be easy. And it didn't happen. I called George Payton at the time, was in Minnesota. He's like, hey, Wynn, yeah, good guy, but we like our guy. I talked to a number of teams. And at that point, I started getting really concerned. And finally, after day three, and those were three miserable days for you, by the way. You were not a happy camper.
I
came
tough.
Home, obviously. We hung out together, and it was just like it was
blah.
It sucked. And at the end of the day, it came down to the Giants and the Eagles both offering generally a minimum deal, right? Like, he was about to make – he had done a $15 million contract. He was about to make, what, three or four that year.
Yeah.
And we're getting offered $8.95 or $8, whatever the hell it is. I'm going, oh, my God, to compete. So I'm like, Marquette, let's go with Philly, I guess. He's like, I'm not fucking going to Philly. I'm like, all right, well, let's go to the Giants. Actually, I can move it up to probably $1 million. I'm not fucking playing in New York. What the fuck? Like, okay, cool. Like, okay, now not only does he, you know, in a shitty situation, he doesn't want to go to the two teams or at least offer him an opportunity. So I call a good friend of mine, Kenny Hansmar. Kenny, shout out to you, the old cowboy.
Okay.
And I go, look, man, I don't know what the fuck. He doesn't want to go play here. He goes, God damn it, call Denver. You know, I'm like, Denver doesn't need a punter. Like, they're not, you know, call Denver. And you had mentioned that, like, in your revenge factor moment, you're like, I want to go to Denver. I'm like, dude, all right.
But also at the same time, like, they had altitude. So, like,
yeah.
All I had to do was
shoot. Every punter's dream.
Every punter's dream. I could shank a 50-yard punt every time.
So what happens is I call Denver. One of my friends was the director of players personnel there, TJ. And, hey, look, Mark, I'd be really interested. I left a message. It didn't even pick up.
Are we going to get to the point of you
the
being
point. Here's like, the point. Here's
Jesus
the point.
Christ.
Well, the point is Denver calls back. That's the point. And they go.
They kept me there.
They go, well, what, so what are the other teams? Like, well, there's, you know, six teams. We're looking at least a, you know, $7 to $8 million type deal. No, there was no $7 or $8 million deal. Long story short, we signed a, we put him in the punter's mecca. We put him in Denver. I'm like, where else? You're going to punt there for 20 years.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
And we signed a deal for millions of dollars.
One of the things that's interesting that not a lot of people know about is when you're on the outside and you're looking in at somebody get released as a fan or people like unknowingly when you're competing, there's like a real human element to it, right? Like you're left with real raw emotions of like, shit, what do I do? You think about, I would imagine you're probably thinking about the money situation. Like, what's next? Like, there's some ego things that are going on. So you have to lean on friends, family, and all this other stuff to kind of figure stuff out. Like, when you were going through all this, is there anything that you remember about that moment that helped you kind of get to the other side so you could start to compete again? Because it's hard if you're competing when you're mentally.
I think when I went to Denver and the way that he structured the contract for me where become an All-Pro or make it a Pro Bowl within the next 2 years, since it was a 3-year contract, the third year I would have got an extra M. I was like, that's easy. Like, it's so easy. So, like, I remember I was on the phone with you. I was like, man, set it up. Set it up right now.
Because I was a little worried. I was trying to move it just a little more.
Yeah, and I was like, bro,
I got this. We're fine.
I was like, set it up. Right. And then next day, you know, we go to practice, and then it's like, all right, so you're not going to kick like you normally kick. You're going to change it up. And I'm like, what?
And that's when I started. This is from the special teams coach.
Yeah, it's interesting. Because you had dinner with them the night before. That's where they decide to sign you. So you're thinking everything's okay. You go your first day of practice, and this guy flips the script on him. And that's true.
So it's, I don't know.
Tell us what they were telling you, like how you originally kicked, and then they were trying to kind of give us an idea as to how that goes.
Instead of me, like, facing the direction I want to kick and going that direction, let's say if I was supposed to go right, I would do what I normally do. But if I was going to go left, I would face the direction I would go right. Drop the ball on the outside of my foot and swing my leg around my body and, like, try to hit the ball to the left. And then some days I'll be so embarrassed because it'll be like some of the punt returners will stand right there. They'd be like, what the fuck are you doing?
Like, now, it doesn't have anything to do with scheme. It's just purely for kicking.
I totally didn't understand anything.
But part of that is coaching, and I think that's one of the points. So for me, as I look at it in a leadership position, if you're going to tell somebody to do something – you better have an idea as to what the bigger picture is so you could understand, look, if you kick it this way, it's because we're actually – it's not about you kicking it 60 yards. We actually want it to go 40 because we have a scheme for that or something of that nature. I don't know. I'm not a special teams coach, but strategy-wise, did they ever tell you anything like that? Or
I mean, it was a so-called strategy, but
– he was just trying to change – because it doesn't make sense from my perspective why you'd already shown success. Like, what's the point? Could it potentially be you're in low altitude? We can't have you kick it 80 yards every time.
I mean, all you had to do is ask me to just hit it a little bit higher, and I could have hit it higher and shorter because it was what I normally did. But, like, to take me from what I was used to doing to something totally.
I think that's a good point. I think so. What you're tackling is, look, if there's a scheme and a concept, and by the way, that special teams coach throughout the league had a reputation, had a good reputation, right? Was he with your boy from the Colts, McAfee or whatever, maybe? I can't remember if he coached him. Anyways, there is a concept of scheme, but I think Marquette's point, which is very important, is there's a distinction. Okay, if I kick it different, if I kick it over here or kick it shorter, fine. But if you're going to change my entire motion and then possibly injure me, That's fucked up. That's a little bit of a problem. So what happened was there was a clash, right? There was a clash. You became a very – it was a bad – that was a bad experience.
Yeah, it was tough.
I want to hear about the clash. Yeah, let's hear about the clash.
It was just – I just lost my happiness. I honestly didn't want to play football no more. Like, it's almost like you a hooper, so if I was a coach and I told you the only way you can shoot a three-pointer is if you face the sideline and shoot backwards.
Right.
Like,
yeah, I get it.
And you know you won't have success doing it, then it's going to bother you. It's going to destroy your happiness because you're trying to obviously create some kind of legacy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it affects your legacy, affects a lot of that. And also it affects you trying to help the team, period.
It does. And here's what happened. Here's my rule. He's very unhappy. He's clearly in a bad place. I still personally think that you hadn't healed and really grasped or understood what the hell happened in Oakland, right? Because you love the Raiders.
I'd be wondering, what if I would have just took a year off of football after that? Because it was tough. You never know.
But it is hard, too, right? Like, I mean, distance away from the game, possibly. I mean, I know there's a mental state of it,
you want to stay relevant.
There's momentum. Stay relevant. That's a good point.
There was a reputation, a little bit of a reputation that he was already a little upset, right? And then I got a call from Mark, like, hey, I'm done. Fuck this guy. I'm not fucking punting.
So was there one thing that happened? I mean, I know you had said they were trying to change it, but was there something at practice or like an event that was the end of it where you're like, fuck it, I don't want to play football anymore? Or was it just like death by a thousand cuts?
It was a thousand cuts, dude.
It
was a bunch of cuts, but it was one thing. So, like, man, it was – so I feel like you was at my first game. Was it with the Raiders?
Against Raiders. I think it was against the Raiders.
The coach asked me what direction I wanted to kick. And then because I was given the option to kick that direction, and I told him where I felt comfortable kicking. And remember, at this time, I'm being really even over-exaggerative.
He's trying to be a well-coached. He's trying to be coached.
Yeah, so because I'm like, I don't know why I got let go, so maybe I just listen more. So he asked me where I want to kick, and I said I want to kick to the right because the wind's pushing the ball over there. I feel comfortable kicking that direction, and I feel like I can put the team in the best position there. As he ran out on the field, in the middle of the field, hey, we're going to change up the direction. We're going to go left. I don't want them to run into your leg. And I think after that play, it was like, I don't want to do this no more.
That was a big deal because you called me and said, I'm done. And I was like, you know what? I don't know what to do, but I'll tell you how to handle this appropriately. And I said, look, get a meeting with the coach. And at the time, Vance, Coach Joseph, and I said, look, you're not getting along with your special teams coach. Get a meeting with the head coach. Explain your position and say, look, I want to be here. I want to handle this appropriately. I really want to rip this guy's head off, but I'm going to handle things the right way. And I even, in the background, I called Guy McIntyre, who you know, who's a hell of a guy. By the way, Guy, you're going to be on here one of these days. You're going to be on here one. But
Guy, we're going to bring you on just to talk about
how you use one of these things right here.
But the reason I called Guy is he was real cool with Joseph, and I'm like, Guy, can you please call Coach and explain to him, like, because he knew Marquette. I'm like, look, Marquette's having a real issue. He's trying to handle things the right way, but this relationship's not working. He's trying to change his kicking style, you know. You had a meeting, right? And what? Tell me what happened in the meeting.
Man, I don't know about that one.
Yeah, let's hear it. Now we really want to know. Nah, one more drink for you, bartender. Fill him up. Where's the pretty waitress?
I got one.
The point is, it didn't go well.
Yeah,
it didn't go well, and he just continued to spiral. I mean, being on your skateboard. I did get a call from Elway going, what the fuck, is everything okay? Like, what the fuck's going on? I don't like getting calls from Elway in that way. I was hoping to get a call from Elway going, hey, we'd like to do a 5-year deal. Yeah. I don't want to hear, hey, tell that motherfucker to get off the skateboard. I don't want to hear that. But in his context, you were fucking hurting. You were in a bad place.
It was dark.
It was a dark time period.
Yeah. So you end up getting cut at that point?
Released? Injured first, right?
So we were playing the Chiefs and, I don't know, my leg's so fucked up from changing up the way I kick. And it's almost like, I don't know, if somebody was to throw a piece of tissue at my leg, like, it was over. And then he brought the other punter, Kobe Wattman, in at the time. And we played in the game. The first punt, they're like, just hit the ball as far as you can. And, like, playing with the Raiders with Brad Sealy, they want me to kick it high and short where Tyreek Hill couldn't get a hold of it. And I just hit an Aussie. It was a nice Aussie. It was just, I guess things didn't work out the way I thought it was going to work out because it wasn't like the Raiders coverage team. So I hit a nice high punt, not too far, probably like 47 yards, 4-5. That's actually a good punt. And man, he just ran the thing down the sideline. Some linebacker just pow, hurt my leg. When I fell on the ground, I got up and I tried to walk, and I'm like, whoa. I ain't never got hurt before. And I'm walking across the field from the Kansas City sideline all the way to the Broncos. And as I'm walking, I'm like, man, I'm finna go on the beach next week. I'll be at the beach somewhere in L.A. So as I'm walking, I'm thinking about this, and I hear boos in the crowd, and I'm just walking across the field. Can't wait to go to this beach. That's the only thought that was in my head. I was like, I got to get away from this. Like, I can't do it. I can't do it.
So it becomes mental even before it became physical, right? Like, you had to deal with the Raider thing. Then you had to deal with the Denver, the coaching staff. So as you look back on that now, I'm always interested in how people look back, because at the time you're like, I want to go straight to the beach. I don't want to play here, all these different things. Are there any lessons that you think to yourself that you've learned looking back?
I think the main lesson is you can't control if anybody likes you or not, and don't try to control it. The people that are meant to be attracted to you will be attracted to you. You continue doing what you do, continue being the person that you're meant to be, and the right people will come to you.
That's actually on my Bumble profile.
You must be putting a lot then.
No, but it's a good point, right? Like, the people that are supposed to be attracted to you will be attracted to you, and spend time and energy on those types of things. I think that's a really good point.
Look, you're going through life, and now, look, you're injured. We do a settlement. He's done for the year. And there's two things that happened. You did go to the beach. We hung out and you started.
Was
you
that
started,
at the 90210 house?
Yes, it was. Thank you, Gary Ash. By the way, that house is fucking awesome.
I remember that.
So, and Marquette, thank you for covering that house. I really appreciate that. That was awesome. There's certain people out there that think I covered it, but fuck off.
No,
anyways,
no. Actually, there's no one that thinks you covered it. I can promise you that. That's one thing I can guarantee.
But it was interesting, and this is why I kind of dovetail in it. And we'll get back to. Look, the fact that at that moment, you were injured both physically and emotionally. But let's talk a little bit about your music and transition a little bit, because I believe, personally, that's the one thing that fucking kept you sane regardless. At least you had moments to escape and develop and develop into what you wanted to develop into, which is talk a little bit about what role music plays for you.
In the creative.
Because it's
not just music, right? You're just a creative individual. I know you outside of here. Obviously, I know you outside of football, but you're just a creative individual. What? That's a great question. What role did that play, and how has it evolved over the last several years?
It definitely played a huge role. Like, at the same time, like, one of the main things I live by, especially now, is you don't tie one thing. Like, so I don't tie football into who I am as a person. It doesn't define who I am, because I'm way more than that, and it can get taken away from me. And my first lesson, which I don't know why I didn't understand this, but, like, I don't know, like, when I saw somebody that used to be one of my teachers when I was little, like, when she worked a different job and she wasn't a teacher anymore, and it's like, wow, so, like, you do something different? Like, you got a real life? Like, so it kind of showed me, like, it's you're not stuck and trapped to do just one thing. So I started doing more music, kind of expressed myself a little more, and it was just fun. I've always liked being creative, so that was my way of kind of like just doing something different to get me away from reality. So
tell us a little bit. For people that don't know, tell us what you do in music, and give us some background on that.
So I do EDM, dance, house, and hip hop. A little bit of pop. I got a pop song right now, popping right now. Huge ass.
Is that
with
you? You're on the Billboard in LA.
Yeah. Huge Billboard in LA. I got a couple of little sticky posters out here in San Diego in the Bay. But it's super poppy. I try to make sure I talk about things that I've actually been through to a certain extent. Sometimes they're a little over exaggerated with a professional regular guy. Shout out to Jody Ferguson. Shout out to Annabelle. Shout out to Sincerely Collins. We got a lot of work done, man. And it's definitely going to a positive direction, especially with the music.
And so, how do people find you on with the music?
You can just look my name up. I thought about getting the alias name, but it's just Marquette King.
Oh,
Marquette
King.
Yeah, depending on how
Marquette.
I feel. Yeah.
Okay.
Marquette or Marquette? That's
that's what he said.
That's
a whole nother thing.
So my last question is we need to wrap things up, and I'm really, and thank you, by the way, for being here. It's been really, really cool.
I'll decide when we wrap.
Oh, okay, cool.
Fuck you.
here's the fuck you call. Football. What's going to happen now? Like, where do you think you're going to get another shot? Do you want another shot? What do you think is going to happen? And what happens if you don't play? What happens if you do play? Like, talk to me a little bit.
The plan is to go back and play again, even if I play for free, because I feel like I'm so close to reaching a certain goal. I don't know. Kicking is something that's very important to me because it's kind of therapeutic. But my plan is to go back. Now, the only thing that I dislike is, I don't know if people are done dealing with me, just let me know so I can go on about my life, so I can get my fucking house in London. You know what I'm saying? Like, or somewhere in the Dominican or somewhere tropical. Like, let me know. But, like, I don't know. It gets aggravating getting strung along. Mm. Like, especially when you constantly wake up every day and you practice at the highest level that you can to stay prepared, especially when you've proven yourself.
It wears on you, man.
You've proven yourself over the years, and you're still just not getting a fair shot, which is aggravating. So, like, I don't know. I do have my days where it's like, man, fuck this shit. But, like, then I do have my days where it's like, all right, I still see the light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah. Like, I can still go.
So I have a point, and I think it ties into the Fuck You Friday thing. And that point is, no matter what you do, no matter what profession that you're in, you're going to have these days of, like, man, fuck you. And maybe I want to do something different. So how, when you get to that point, right, because everybody, when they're good, they're good. But when you get to the point of, fuck you, I'm done, you're stringing me along, this, and this, how do you overcome that and do something, like, to get something out of it?
It's like being with a chick.
Oh, okay.
It's like,
all right, buckle up here. All right.
Put your seatbelts on, brothers.
Okay.
So it's like being with a chick. You can have all the best times in the world with her, take her out on dates, do all this, do all that, and enjoy your time with her. But at the same time, you got to spend time getting away from it, just like I spent the last 2 weeks not kicking the ball. I don't want to see no football. I don't touch a football. You get the fuck away from it. And then the following week, you come back at it stronger than you did before. And
I'm going to use that clip, actually. Like, hey, I need at least 2 weeks off.
So yeah, you got to get
we
away.
We like each other, but hey, I need look, at least 2 weeks off every 3 weeks.
Look, man, sometimes it's just, I don't know, especially when you've done it for a long time. Like, you deal with them for a long time. You've done that for a long time. You got to get away from it, because if you don't, then you're going to drive yourself crazy.
So basically what you're saying is, Fuck You Friday is like dating. Fuck You Friday is like a chick.
I don't know. Did I say that?
No, yeah, I don't think that
I
was
I don't
it.
Know if that's it.
That was a stretch.
But let's. I mean, at this point, I have one other statement, and this goes to whether you play her again, and then we'll wrap it up. And thank you, because I don't want you to take too long here. But
I'm chilling.
If a team were to call you and say, "Hey, look, we know you can punt, and we know that you're an artist, we know you love music, but for now, I want you to shut your fucking Instagram off. We don't care, and we're not worried that you're not focused, but from a fan's perspective, if you do fuck up, we're worried that they'll come on you, because that'll be an excuse for fans to say, see, he's not practicing as much as he is. We just don't want that shit." Are you willing to do that? Or I mean, and I'm not saying that that's the reason. Okay? Yeah. I'm just saying, because of who you are as an artist and pure to – and you are an artist, and you're getting better. You're getting a lot better. You still suck, but you're getting better.
Shut your ass.
But the point is, would you do that to go – back to a team, or is that a moment where you go, you know what, I'm comfortable saying I'm stepping in a next direction and it's okay? What would you do?
I'm going to do it. I want that record, and I want to accomplish this goal, and it won't take long. It won't take long.
No,
I just need 3 to 5 years. Like, I don't want to play no more than that. And once I get to that point, I'm out. You know what I'm saying? I want to live my life. I want to be able to express myself like I want to, and I just want to live life like an actual human. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I definitely conform and do what I got to do to get a job.
So you are in a spot now that is a couple years removed, right, from being active on a roster? Two, three?
2 years.
2 years removed? So on an active
roster.
Okay,
so you're... Well, shit. Does the XFL count?
Well, that's interesting, but no, it doesn't count.
All right, from an NFL roster, right?
You're talking about the league. Right?
There's only one league.
No disrespect. And by the way, I love what's happening with the merger between the CFL. And we'll get into that after that. But, yeah. No, we're talking about the NFL.
Yeah. So I guess the point is like, you talked a little bit about when you were there at the time and how difficult it was, and now you're in a different spot a couple of years later. At the time, you were like, oh, fuck it, I'm done. I want to go to the beach. Now you're a couple years in. You're like, now I want to get back. What does that say about the mental part of, because you were done. I mean, for all intents and purposes, you were done. And now looking back, you're like, wait a minute, no, I'm not done. There's something I got left in the tank that I need to get accomplished.
I was just done at the time because of what I was going through. What I was going through was tough. I feel like everybody's put in a different situation. And I'm sure when you had your downtimes, if certain people were in your downtimes or certain people were in my downtimes, they wouldn't be able to handle it. So they would find a way to take themselves out, or they wouldn't handle the situation the same way we handle it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, like, we're putting our journey of life, we walk out in our own pair of shoes in a place that we need to be, where we belong. Nobody else belongs there.
Where and lastly, and then we can wrap because I decide. But lastly, are you happy? Like, are you in? Where's your head at right now? As you've gone through all these different things,
I'm happy as fuck.
Are you?
Yeah, I can't complain about nothing. My music's popping. Like, it's popping really well. Football wise, I'm in a really good place with that. Like, I've been training, working hard.
No regrets. Any regrets?
Fuck no.
Zero.
Why would I regret? What am I regretting for? Because if I do regret and I could redo it again, I wouldn't be in the situation I'm in now.
Right.
Yeah, and there's a distinction between regret and reflection. And I think that I feel like you've experienced life and you're in a position now to win. You know, and you've gone through some shit, which is what the podcast is about.
I've known you for several years back when you were playing in the league, and then now, and I'm super happy to hear that you're happy. I'm proud of the things that you've gone through, being able to admit, like, going through these tough times, and then actually getting out of those tough times, and then looking back, going, what did I learn during those tough times? Because going through that gets you to this point of happiness and fulfillment, and so. As someone who's known you for a number of years, I'm really happy to hear that.
I appreciate you. Yeah. Are you doing better with your hands when you talk? Because you look like you're actually talking about something.
Look, I'll decide when we wrap this up. And by the way, this has been an awesome podcast.
I'll edit this out.
This has been an awesome podcast. Thank you very much for appreciate it. This wraps it up for another session of Fuck You Friday.
No, Fuck You Friday.
Oh, Fuck You Friday.
Fuck You Friday.
Fuck both of y'all needs.
That's awesome. That's how we wrap.
All right.
Because I decide.
All right. See you later.